Hey everybody, welcome to Bat and Spider, episode 190. That is 190 for those counting and not believing. This week for the show, we watched a movie called Mad Love with Peter Lorre. Foxtrot Bebop, friend of the show, goes on to say in their review of Mad Love, "Loved seeing Lorre in that rad as hell getup, that corrective neck brace from hell, because the costume really seemed to have given Lorre the permission to be a deranged sicko and unlock a performance I've never seen from him elsewhere. So cool." So that's what this is. What we're this is what we're getting into with Mad Love from 1935.
Yeah, that getup. That getup made the picture. It's almost a left turn where you're like, it blows your mind. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you start doubting what you think is going on.
It's where the that fat Cenobite got his look from. Butterball? Is that his name?
I think his official hell name is Butterball, yeah.
His hell name.
They have fun down there.
Yeah, they got to keep each other happy and, you know, jovial. Give each other jape names.
Do you think Nailhead, do you think he's the one who hands out the names as they come out of the torture factory?
There's a good shot that Nailhead, he's like, he probably like says a couple things to him to like warm him up and try to pinpoint their personality in a couple sentences. Yeah. And then that's when he'll hand
and then
it
he
out.
just starts in with the ribbing, and that's, you know, nickname.
Yeah. But with Butterball, he didn't even need to talk to Butterball. He's just like, you.
Oh my God. No. He just saw the silhouette.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably like, sorry, I don't even need to talk to you, Butterball. Get on out here.
He's not even facing Butterball as he's coming down the ramp.
Yes. Yeah. Get on out here, Butterball. We got some torture.
You can tell by the footsteps.
Yeah. He's probably like, oh Jesus, here we go. Got a live one here, everyone.
Oh, God.
So we're going to get into Peter Lorre's...
I can't wait.
Get up at the appropriate time that we deem so. But, you know, it's been a week. You know, it's been a week.
Yeah.
It's been a week, and we're here once again to talk about... anything we're free and able to talk about that we feel like talking about, anything we got to get off our chest, anything we want to mention that we watched or listened to. We can make japes about the Black Keys if you'd like live. Whew,
God, let's not. We don't want to divide the audience further. Dale. I went to the dentist today, the old dentist office. I haven't been since 2019, I believe, since the old plague hit.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm not going. And then I just, you know, let that fester a while. But thankfully, clean bill of health.
No way.
Pearly whites are okay. Just a little staining, I've noticed. And it's always in places I can't see.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you got some stains here. You drink coffee? And I'm like, well, not really, but tea. And they're like, well, tea will do it too. Okay. All right. Whatever you say.
And then you're like, did I mention I haven't been here for 4 years? Is it that bad? Like treating you.
Oh, I was mentioning it left and right. Oh, yeah, well, yeah. It's been 4 years, but also this is a new dentist. I switched. I moved up. I moved
closer. Perfect time. Perfect time to do it.
Yeah. It's great. It's right down the street for me. It's fantastic. I like the vibe. Music was terrible. Just god awful.
Really? Yeah. FM?
I didn't hear any commercials, but it was just, I mean, I don't want to insult you. I don't know if you like these bands, but it was like back-to-back Goo Goo Dolls, Matchbox 20 type S.
I was a big Boy Named Goo fan. I will admit that. I would be the first to admit that when BMG sent me the CD.
I had a feeling you had some goo love. Yeah.
Yeah.
BMG did. Yeah.
You could tell.
Yeah, I could tell.
Big Boy Named Goo fan. But, and the name, the single name. I love that song. But after that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and that, you know, what's that drop ceiling called? You know, with like the tiles and stuff.
Like plenum.
Yeah, this denim. They removed two of the rectangles and replaced one with a beautiful blue sky. Like you're, aww, you know, because when they put you back in the chair, you're staring at the ceiling. So I could either look at a blue sky. What was the other one? I can't remember now because I was focused on that blue sky.
Something to look at.
The other thing, new technology, at least for me, they used a water pick as well as the regular pick, but it was mostly this water pick. I didn't like it. I have some sensitive teeth to cold.
Yeah.
And as I told the hygienist, I said, wow, this thing, at times it feels like you're drilling into my teeth with this water pick. And then I had a laughing fit in the chair.
And, right.
That was fun. But have you experienced this thing, this high-powered water pick?
Yeah, I get nervous. I get nervous with anything powered at all.
Yeah.
I'm the worst at the dentist, and I have clammy hands the whole time I'm in the chair. But something like that, and it gets like too close to the gum.
Zzz, oh, yeah. Zzz,
zzz, like, mm-mm, it doesn't matter what it is. I am like floating off of the chair when it gets near to nicking something sensitive.
Yeah. It always makes me wish I was it Bill Murray in Little Shop of Horrors who he got off on going to the dentist. Was that him?
I think it had to have been.
Sometimes I wish I could be that guy at the dentist and just like I just love the pain, you know, but I can't.
Steve Martin was the dentist, right?
He was the dentist. I thought there was like
a dentist lover.
Like he loved to be tortured by a dentist. Anyway, so I experienced that new dental technology. So, and I survived.
Congrats on 4 years. Thanks. Without nary no a cavity. That's amazing. Yeah.
I didn't even see the doctor. The doctor apparently was too busy to see me.
Oh,
but okay. I guess he took a quick gander at my x-rays while he was busy and he said, yeah, he's fine. So,
right. What about the hole that the hygienist drilled in your tooth from the overpowered water pick? No concerns.
Well, she was nice about it.
Oh, okay. So there you go. Okay. You went to the dentist. That's good.
Yeah.
Chuck.
Yeah.
This past weekend, you could call it an official, unofficial tape deck / paper keg summit, mm-hmm, our annual summit.
Yep.
So some of us gathered off schedule and we watched like 10, thanks to the power of Tubi and autoplay, we watched like 10 Andy Sidaris movies.
Oh my God.
And then we watched the Royal Rumble Saturday night. Heaven.
Yeah. I mean, that's best case scenario right there.
We started with Hard Ticket to Hawaii. That's the one we dialed in on purpose. Okay. And then the autoplay we left just because we could. One of the TVs in the house, we left autoplaying Andy Sidaris movies the entire time we were there.
Wow.
It was like putting on kiosk mode at a department store just so we could show off the abilities of this TV. And when I tell you, every time we looked over at that TV, there was a pair of boobs or guns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or Kevin Eastman.
I was like, cut me down now and send me down below into the fiery pits because I've had my fill. I've indulged this weekend.
I'm sad I missed that. I really got to catch up on Sidaris. He there's so many I need to watch.
I want to tell you that this movie, Picasso Trigger, Chuck.
Yeah.
Picasso Trigger, write it down. The same characters from Hard Ticket to Hawaii. They're not this. It's not the same stable of actors playing other people. It's the two Molokai Cargo, Bounty Hunter, Ladies, wow. Donna Spear, like everybody plays the same characters. It's worth just for that.
Is it a sequel?
Yeah, it's a sequel.
Okay.
But there's another cousin. There's another Abilene cousin. It's not the Malibu Express, Cody Abilene or Rowdy Abilene. It's another Abilene cousin. Wow. It's amazing. Picasso Trigger. Look it up.
Gotta. How about that Royal Rumble? I gotta say, at least in this house, Melissa and I watched it. The ladies Rumble won out. That we felt that was a way more entertaining than the boys Rumble. I don't know how the vibe was over there.
Yeah, the consensus was amongst us that the man Rumble was just a little bit too vanilla. It was a little too, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of action going on. There was a lot of one-on-one, a lot of people just like resting in corners, which always happens at the Rumble, but it was just, there was nothing else happening that was exciting or, you know, other than Cody Rhodes finishing the story on his way.
Yeah, I don't know if the whole thing was affected by that. Like everyone just waiting for Cody and Punk, you know? Like
yeah.
It was like clear they were going to be the last two standing. So I felt like that kind of took out a little bit of the fun. But also, one of this Bron Breakker guy, that was fun. I don't know if I've ever seen him wrestle before, but he brought a lot of energy. Apparently he was a last minute replacement for old Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at this guy now.
Persona au gratin.
This guy was born in 1997. Just son of a bitch.
The baby.
God. I was happy. Yeah, I can't remember. But he was good. I'm going to say he was good because you said he was good.
Yeah.
The Cody and Punk, I don't know a whole lot. I know CM Punk was like beloved, and then he wrestled in Chicago 10 years ago and it was like the greatest match because he's from Chicago. And then he was unhappy and he left, and then he was there elsewhere, and now he's back. And then much like you pulling slightly down on a window shade to make it flap up, both of CM Punk's triceps during the Royal Rumble did this maneuver. And now he's out again anyway. It doesn't matter. This guy was so flaccid. I was I was just like, instead of muscle and vein, Chuck, it was just like a pile. It was like a huge skin tag in front of me. It was just lifeless, like a bulge of fatty tissue that could be twisted off or taken off by a dermatologist for $100 because that's what they charge.
It's like
just a ball of putty.
Yeah, it's like what the balloon, like you have you get three balloons for your birthday as a kid and you're so attached to them, and the helium wears off and they fall down, and then eventually they deflate and they're just these sad stretched out pieces of rubber just laying there. And that's
because
what it was like, right?
Because it's never completely like empty. It's always got a little bit of air in it. That's exactly what it was, just like this.
And you can tell it was once great, in a great shape,
right?
But now, no.
But after watching the Royal Rumble and CM Punk doing this like sleepy time gesture every 2 seconds, and the people in this Tampa Bay baseball stadium, They're like pumping in fake audience cheers because nobody gives a crap. He's winded. He's frumping around the ring. Nobody cares. I got news.
I don't know, man. I don't know. He gets ratings, I guess. But I think it's his mouth. I saw someone on Reddit saying they should just put him on the announce desk, which, you know what? I think that would actually be great.
Is he good at that kind of stuff?
I think he's good at talking. He's good at being an asshole with his words. So, he might be a good heel announcer or something. I don't know.
He better watch like picking up microphones or carrying his own arm weight around because his tender I mean, to go in for double tricep surgery, Chuck.
Wait, it's both of them?
It is right now for Bat and Spider.
What I heard is that, well, because this happened to him 2 years ago. This happened to him when he was in AEW. He tore his tricep. And I think and he had to get surgery. He was out for like 9 months. And I think he tore the other one this time, is what I'm reading.
Over here at 411mania.com, he suffered a torn tricep. I don't care. It's probably both of them, because even if it's one, once he's wheeled on the gurney and they start making him count backwards, yeah, his other one's probably going to flap up and just disconnect, and they're going to have to fix it while they're in there anyway, because he's going to be under. I can guarantee it. And then they're going to have to tape up not just his hands like he's some sort of brawler. They're going to have to tape up his whole arm.
Yeah.
And then draw lightning bolts on the whole arm.
Did you see Cody's tooth that popped out?
No, I didn't see that. You are an insider. You are following 411mania.com, all kinds of things.
It's my fault. It's as soon as you get into something, my phone, you know, these phones. I don't know if iPhones are like this, but Google phones know everything about me, what I look at.
Oh yeah, they do.
What I watch on YouTube. So it just pumps the article. The article's in my news feed. So I just see everything, you know?
Right.
But yeah, Drew McIntyre kicked his tooth out, and there's a still like Cody's head laying on the mat, and then next to it is this big bloody tooth.
My God. And he didn't break kayfabe.
He went on.
He's finishing the story. He's
finishing the story.
And it all starts here at the Rumble.
So it went so well last time, we're going to do it all again.
Yeah. We're going to get, Cody, don't, when you win, we're going to give you 5 minutes to stare up at the WrestleMania sign, emotional. Don't you worry, dude. We got you this time.
We got plenty of airtime. Don't worry about it.
Right. And the Women's Rumble, good. It was good.
It's more action-packed.
The matches, I don't know, this four-way, like we didn't know my God. What was happening with this fatal four-way.
Tell me, should I stop taking melatonin, or should I start putting on Roman Reigns matches at night to fall asleep?
I am telling you right now,
this guy,
Chuck's face, he knows he just let lightning out of his mouth. And he's hoping he didn't spend it all on that one line for the rest of the night.
I know. I hope I got more.
Gold. Yeah, it's silly. It's so silly. God, I love it.
Should we just get into Mad Lovedale?
Chuck, we've been beating around the bush. We've been pee-footing around long enough, but we really need to get down on this week's movie.
We got a power couple that work in the theater biz. One of them is a pianist, famous pianist, touring the country, playing piano. The other, she gets tortured on stage to the delight of the public. The pianist gets his hand smashed, but luckily for him, his wife has a creepy doctor who's obsessed with her, watching her get tortured in the theater. And this guy's, you know, he's doing things in his laboratory that no one's done, you know. So, but what this guy does is he puts a knife killer's severed hands on this pianist. And, pretty soon this guy can't help but, you know, he's horny for knives. He can't help it. He's touching those blades. He's palming them, palming blades left and right, palming pens. He's just throwing them into wood. Like a sharpshooter, like Bullseye from Daredevil.
Yeah, perfectly.
It's dangerous. And the good doctor, he just, he's, he can't, he's just in love. He's, he's, uh, He's an incel. He just can't understand why he can, this guy, you know, he can know everything about science, but he can't make love happen no matter what he does, no matter whose hands he replaces. He just can't fix it for himself. And that's where we get our title, Mad Love. There we go.
Crazy. You nailed it down. Now, right off the bat, Chuck.
Yeah.
I probably knew this at some point in my life. If I didn't know the name, I knew who this person was, but now I know.
Okay.
Who was being animated in the Bugs Bunny cartoons? Peter Lorre.
Oh yeah.
Now I know.
Yeah.
Because he was in a ton of like Bugs Bunny cartoons and other cart animation where they would like parody him specifically.
I totally forgot about that. That's why kids know who he is. I completely forgot about that. Oh, that's amazing, Dale. Good pickup.
Yeah. I was like, this is the guy with the eyes.
Yeah.
Like the droopy, baggy eyes and the voice in Bugs Bunny.
Nobody, you know, no one looks like this guy.
That's absolutely true. This movie was a spotlight on letting Peter Lorre's character just become completely unhinged throughout this movie. It's so good because at the beginning, he gives off vibes that he's a creep, and everybody picks up on it, but you know what? He's supporting the theater, and that's where like it stops.
Yeah, supporting the theater, and he's a world famous surgeon or whatever.
Right, he's got helping, that going for him.
They keep pushing the whole thing of him like helping children, like making children walk again, and not charging them money. You know, they really pushing two sides of this guy's coin.
Yes, and he fixes malformed kids was one of the. One of the kids' ailments where they were malformed, and he fixes them. But yeah, exactly. And so, you know, until like the line is drawn and he crosses it, it's like, okay, this guy is like clearly in love, but he's swallowing it all down inside. Other than the fact that he bought like the wax figure of Orlak, Yvonne, your Orlak. My dog is dreaming on mic. Can you hear that?
No. Oh, yeah.
He's barking in his sleep right now. I'm sure the noise
came. Can you get a lav mic on him next time? So
I'm gonna hang him from the ceiling right over top of him.
Yeah.
I'm sure the noise gating will drop Ziggy's barking, but it's adorable. But then at a certain point, and it's almost like I didn't realize it was happening. At a certain point, I had realized that he had already crossed a line and he's become unhinged.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of paint after Yvonne is straight with him and says, yes, I find you extremely hideous and I will never. You don't have a chance, Buster. Like that's kind of treated as the line where he goes over where he like loses it.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
I think. Yeah. Because then he goes into surgery after that, and he starts hearing her voice in his head, and he can't see straight, and Dr. Wong has to take over. You know.
Yeah, that's right. That was such a. I mean, she admitted. She's like, yeah, I traded in like your love for me so I could get my husband fixed. And she's like, I admit that now. And I was like, oh my God, like we knew it.
But he knew it. Yeah, he knew it too. But it just like to hear her say it, it's like, you know,
oh,
for
my God,
a guy like that, he's hanging on by a thread. That's that's all it takes.
The only thing, you know, what she could put him off and like, turn her cheek when he goes to kiss her or whatever. But you just, as long as he doesn't hear the words, "I will never be with you because I, you know, especially because I find you frightening," was like the line. Oh, yeah. Then it's just like nail in the coffin right there. Like that is the one thing he'd, you know, he probably assumed that she never wanted to be with him until he heard the words.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then
yeah,
it's like that, fucking real.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Dr. Golgol? Great name.
Great name.
It felt like everyone who said it in the movie was like tripping over the name. It was perfect. How about him charging the Orlocks tons of money for this hand surgery? Well, he's giving out free surgery left and right. But he's like, I feel like he never, like, if this was part of his evil plan, he never really like expressed it. Like he was like trying to put them in the poorhouse so that like she would leave him. Was that part of the plan? To like,
right,
put them, you know, into destitution so that they'll break up or something.
Right. Like she was only with Orlok because he was already well off and and a beautiful pianist. And yeah, that was a weird angle for sure.
Yeah. Cause they're like selling rings. They're selling everything to try and pay these doctor bills and all these therapies, these hand therapies. How about that hand therapy montage of all those old timey antique things,
Theraguns,
like massagers, and
that was insane.
Yeah,
all that therapy, like, and the whole time he never reveals that he amputates the guy's hands and put on a murderer's hands. He's just like, I revived these malformed hands.
As a viewer, first time watcher, I was shocked that Colin Clive, who plays the pianist, doesn't know his hands are switched. Like he's under the impression, like he suspects at first, but like he's under the impression these are his hands. They're just repaired.
Right.
And I was like, oh God, they're going to keep this a secret. Like, God, that's insidious.
Just the fact that he just forgets what his hands could, you know, they were crushed so bad in this train accident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His
they
hands
don't even
were,
look like my hands. And Peter Lorre is like, you have to remember they were badly damaged in the accident.
My God, that was good. That was really good. The way he was like gaslighting the guy into believing that they were his hands all along. Like, and the insinuation was there that it's been months or close to a year with this therapy. Yeah. Yeah. Because slowly, you know, she's selling off their belongings. It's not all happening in one day. So, I mean, this guy's living with other people's hands for months, at least 8 months to a year, until he has to go ask his stepdad for a job. His fucking stepdad, that piece of shit. He's just as old as he is.
What was the business that his stepdad ran? Was he like an antique dealer? I couldn't figure it out. Or was it a pawn shop or something?
Yeah, that's what it seemed like for me, because there was like all these cases with maybe jewelry in it. And
yeah. But, and also like the sign had like part of the sign crossed out, but it was in French.
That made me
American, if anyone's wondering.
That made me wonder if, it was like very Scrooge and Marley kind of sign.
Yeah, like
something.
Was there a joke in that? Or Scrooge and Marley. Yeah. Okay. Hang on. Let's rewind the tape a little bit.
Back it up.
We got to cover this theater. I want to talk about this theater, and I want to talk about Yvonne Orlok, played by Frances Drake. First off, Frances Drake. I have seen her in, I've seen The Invisible Ray, but her in the, especially her hair and clothes in the beginning, I was smitten, Dale. I was like a dog on all fours. I was like, look at this incredible human. Look at this. And that these eyebrows. Are these in the Guinness book, how long these eyebrows are?
I hadn't noticed, but
they're incredible.
I hadn't noticed, but wow.
But anyway, she's performing at the Theater des Horrors, Dale. And I don't know if you looked into this. This is based on a real place called the Grand. I don't know how to pronounce this. Let's see. Here, Wikipedia is going to teach me. No, maybe not. Anyway, it's the Theater du Grand Guignol. Guignol. I don't know.
No way.
This theater was in Paris. It ran from 1897 to 1962. I'm reading right from Wiki. It specializes in naturalistic horror shows. Its name is often used as a general term for graphic, amoral horror entertainment, a genre popular from Elizabethan and Jacobean theater.
What?
List some examples. All the way to today's splatter films. Okay, that's some nerd writing that, but
yeah.
But yeah, reading this whole Wikipedia, I was enthralled by that. They even have some pictures.
Whoa.
You know, there's like a crime one of a guy like getting stabbed by two gangster looking guys, and it's the blood all over his white shirt.
What's it called, this theater?
Grand Guignol. So it's Guignol. I mean, this is where you and I, like, imagine it's 1937, Dale, and we're just like, you know, two young wolves in Gay Perry. We're like, what are we going to do tonight? And we're like, you know, I look at you and you know exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go watch some blood live in flesh on the stage.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I think it was a former church. So, remember that shot of Peter Lorre? He's in like the little balcony booth and it's like this slit. It's like you can barely see him.
Yeah.
Because in the real building, they, like, I guess where it used to be a church and they converted where the nuns used to sit. And they had a view like that. It was just a very small space to view. So it was like that. And it was also like, because people would get aroused during this. Well, this is what they say.
Right. Sure. People
are getting aroused watching this stuff. And
just like nowadays, you know?
Yeah. And also vomiting. A lot of vomiting happening.
I could turn, Chuck, I could open my Instagram app and the explore tab, three quarters of the tiles would be people getting aroused to things you might find in the theater Grand Guignol.
Yeah, I know. This is amazing. I can't believe I didn't know about this.
How about this like theater poster on the Wikipedia page?
I know. It's like a severed head on a robot thing. Yeah, I'm...
Theater du Grand Guignol.
There you go. See, that's what we needed.
That's amazing because I was like, the whole time he was going into the theater, I was like, the staff of the theater, they're probably volunteers, right? Because, you know, but they're all into it. They're all cosplaying and dressed up. Yeah. Like the ticket takers are dressed up. I was like, this is the coolest thing. And this is 1935.
And I love how it's played because we're going through with Dr. Gogol's eyes, and he's, you know, he goes every single night because he's infatuated with the young miss. So he's just interacting with these like people. The Kochek person with no head, that I almost laughed like I was watching the Three Stooges. I thought that was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
They have fun.
Yeah.
These theater volunteers.
And I didn't even bring up in the, description of this movie, there's this wax statue of Francis Drake that he, after he finds out it's her last performance, he sees the guys taking away the statue to melt down. And he's like, oh, I'll give you 100 francs. Deliver that to my place. Please and thank you. I'm not a creep.
I know. I'm not a creep. Yeah. He's offering twice what it's worth. I'm not a creep.
Guy's like, okay, buddy, whatever you say. As long as I don't have to talk to you any longer. Sure. Yeah. So he gets this statue put in his drawing room and this guy, that's sick.
My God.
He's just playing organ and talking to it. Oh my God.
Yeah. And he's like, it's so cool, but he starts up when he's buying the wax figure, but he starts up on Pygmalion and this creation that he made that comes to life and stuff. He's so like willing her alive. The whole movie, he is willing this statue, this figure alive until the point where she comes to life because she's hiding in the room. But he is like elated, like the amount of juice that he lets loose.
Galatea! I am Pygmalion! You were wax, but you came to life in my arms!
Dr. Gogo!
Oh my God.
Because she comes to life. Like he has the power of a god now. He is like tripping on his ego.
He loses it. Like you thought he lost it already when he sees her, you know, come to life, flesh and blood in his room. He is like,
Yes. Like his ego, at this point is just like out of hand because he brought this statue to life because of his love and his power. I was going to nitpick by
go for it.
The only thing, I don't know if I hated it. I didn't hate it. I can tell you because I love this whole movie. Some of the parts where the humor is wrenched in and jammed in for, to move the plot along, like I could have been, you know, some of the humor was funny, like the maid with the parrot, she's drunk all the time. Like it's sure it doesn't really fit the theme of the rest of the movie, but I could see it in 1935, like humorous parts are probably like a nice reprieve for the audiences who might be terrified watching this. But some of it actually pushing the plot forward was like, okay. Like, I don't need, you know, it was like...
Like the reporter, like the American reporter. Are you thinking of
him? Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah. And him interfacing with the maid and...
Yeah, I get. I know what you're saying. Like, even though I enjoyed all the comedy stuff and I loved the reporter. Like, he made me laugh.
You know, yes, exactly.
Probably because he is so out of place in this movie.
Right.
There was a lot of like heavy lifting done. Like him, he was like the guy putting all the pieces together. Like, even though he was kind of wrong, I actually liked how what he thought was happening wasn't what was happening technically, but it was still like driving forward. Like he was still able to point the police in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I did like that. He was like wrong about everything, but close enough.
It's funny because in the end, like he was a character in the movie that maybe didn't need to be there at all. I mean, he wasn't like incremental.
It was, it was like,
was that right?
You're right. It was like comedy.
Incremental.
It was like comedy to like lighten the fear factor. And also it was very audience handholdy, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Right. Right. Especially, I mean, and at times,
if you're lost at all, just follow this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Because at times, I mean, it really started getting thick there in the end when Yvonne is in Gogol's house and she's like, the maid is like seeing too because the wax figure's there and she's there. And it's like, what is like this calamitous thing just to get her in the room? And like the statue falls over at one point. And then like, it was so like, was zany for a moment there. It was... That's where I was like,
it was very slapsticky.
Yeah, it was very slapsticky. And then, but this is all integral to her getting in the house. So, you know, he could like see that she falls into his arms and comes to life, but I'm not mad at it. I'm nitpicking the fact that it had to move the plot along the way it did.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I forgive the contrivance of all that because the payoff of him, you know, thinking he turned a wax statue to flesh, and also that shot of the wax statue smashed on the street.
Man, yes, God.
Because you don't realize what she did with the statue when she replaces it with herself,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, oh my God, she threw it out the window.
Yeah,
and it's just a one more horrible image to show. It's great,
mm-hmm. but the way he leans into and owns the sickness that he's being taken over by, like when he gets the idea that, like, you know, if the husband finds out that he's got a murderer's hands, he might commit murder himself, which means that he might have to go to jail and leave Yvonne, and that I can move in. Like the way he starts, like the sickness just starts taking over. And this guy's like, sure, he's a creep, but he's like helping malformed kids and like letting people like, he's such a, you know, pillar of this town and society, but like especially for 1935, and maybe it's just me being a dickhead for like assuming that things couldn't be like this in 1935. But the way he just completely like slips on this banana peel and like falls down these stairs of madness. It's crazy how he just like snowballs into this insane being.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's like dressing up like the Cenobite. Like he's got these metal hands he's like convincing the husband that he's the dead murder victim, you know, but the doctor brought him back to life. Crazy.
That scene when the doctor's going to meet this mystery person, or not the doctor, when the pianist is going to meet this mystery person who has information about his hands. I love that. Yeah. and it's Dr. Golgol, but he's dressed in this neck brace. He has these what look like brass gloves, gauntlets on.
Yeah, like gauntlets.
Because he's saying he's the guy who got hung, and he's like, I have your hands, pianist. You know, like, I was so taken by the, oh, and he's talking with a rasp, so you can't tell it's Peter Lorre. Like, in my head, I was like, okay, I know that's Peter Lorre pretending to be the dead knifesman. But I was so convinced by the whole, I was like, wait, did the doctor really bring that guy back to life too? Like, I was like, wait a second. Like, are they going to, is this going to be a huge twist? Like, I was so convinced for a second.
Me too, because, I mean, he's like, why doubt this doctor's abilities? Maybe he put the head back on his body. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it's all legit.
Maybe after he did the hands, he's like, well, I wonder.
Yeah, right. Like, that's the next logical step.
I loved Rollo, the American knife killer guy.
Oh my God,
Talk about more out of place comedy, but I was in love with this guy. When he's on his walk to the guillotine having his last cigarette, and he spots the American reporter. He's like, hey, can I talk to that guy?
Yeah.
And he just asks him, he's like, I heard they built the Hoover Dam. Is that true?
Yeah. That's all he wanted to know.
Powers thousands of homes or whatever. He's like, yeah, believe it, boy. And he's like, wow. Yeah. He's like, all right, fellas, let's do this.
Yeah. And then he's,
I loved it.
And then he's just, you know, through the whole movie, they just throw pens, ballpoint pens or fountain pens. But that, like, that's how they show off their skills, by throwing pens into the walls and doors.
How about that shot of Peter Lorre watching his execution? Where he's, it's like the sun's in his eyes and his head's cocked up, because you can tell he's looking up at the top of the guillotine.
Yeah.
And just like no emotion really when it happens, but his eyes just follow the guillotine down. Like, and people mention that how he goes to all the executions. Another sick detail for this guy.
I know. Yeah. Right. That leaks out. And it's like, what the F?
Yeah. Ugh.
And the ultimate payoff, which is cool, Colin Clive has to use his murderous hands to kill Peter Lorre through the locked door.
Oh my God.
That was a beautiful piece of like comeuppance. And he's like, finally, like, I could use these hands for good, you know, for the first time.
When he grabs the knife from the police evidence thing, I was like, oh, okay, he's going to end up killing the doctor. But how they did it, I was like, oh, cool. Like, they can't get in the room and he only has a small little hole.
I know.
And he just has to throw the knife.
Cool. Yeah. So, like, that's when he needed to, like, all of his honed skills to come in handy.
Oh, God.
The only thing being, Chuck.
Yeah.
Potentially, you know, Peter Lorre was never going to have a chance in hell anyway, but he killed, like, he's still got murderous hands. After the doctor dies, he's still got a hell of a problem. Like,
where's the sequel? Like, what's I kept imagining, like, when he finally finds out he's got murderous hands. And it sounds ridiculous. Like if you got, like, I don't know. I wonder when this started to sound ridiculous. Like, the idea of getting a transplanted hand from, like, a murderer, like, which you start to murder. Like,
I know.
In 2024, it sounds ludicrous, but back then it was probably like a real fear, because like the idea of a transplant is not science fiction. super science fiction still.
Right.
It even is still kind of now, but, right? They don't really do that.
They've Transplants?
Done, I guess they did like a that? Face transplant, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Can they switch? They can't switch hands, can they? I can't get a new hand. They have to build me a robot hand if I lose a hand, right?
They certainly like advertise prosthetics more than anything, you know, like yeah. plugged into your brain stem and all that jazz.
The rejection, I don't know. That's got to be hard, right? Even if they can line up everything, like I imagine that piece is tough. Or Colin Clive, like, oh, I thought it was all going to lead back to the guillotine again. I was like, he's going to guillotine his own hands off.
Oh God. Yeah, dude.
In my head, I kept like just imagining this scene, this powerful scene of him like,
right. like,
fuck it. I'm not going to play the piano with these knife killing hands.
Yeah. So back to like Rollo getting back at yeah. the guillotine, like Rollo's yeah, suffering yeah. once again, because yeah, he's still killing. That would have been insane.
Yeah.
It's canon now that he did it after this.
I know.
Scene, the write, last scene of the movie.
I'll write a sequel. I'll write some fanfic for Mad Love.
Yeah.
How about the, they were excited about this fly eating plant that they, the FX guys made up.
Oh my God. I was like, this thing looks so terrible. Is this like the very end of a mandible on an ant or a scorpion? What's happening?
I know. Like when they show the maid feeding it the first time, you're like, okay, all right. But then yeah. they did that second time where it's super close up and the fly being pushed up. It's like, guys, come on. You could have cut this.
I know. It's like a real fly and they just taped it, like pasted it to a little tiny skewer or something.
Yeah.
Cause it's not, they're clearly not alive, but it's being moved.
It felt like one of those children's books with the moving.
Yeah.
I feel like this, for me, was the most successful old-timey movie that I've picked for the show. I loved this movie.
I would agree. I agree in this moment. I mean, I don't remember the other old movies we watched. I remember loving them all, but this was another level. Like Peter Lorre was legitimately
he really makes it because there's no one like him, and his just the mm-hmm. way his face quivered and. Oh, and that bald head. I mean, that bald head. Oh, we didn't even mention it. That bald head is just so striking. Oh, yeah. I was kind of shocked to read that this movie kind of was a bomb when it came out. But it seems like it's much more loved in modern times than the day it came out.
People were not ready.
Let's jump into that old mail sack. Sack time.
Bat and Spider's mail sack. Bat and Spider's mail sack. We gonna open that mail sack. We're gonna open up that mail sack. 315-544-0966. That's where you're gonna call and leave a voicemail and pray to God that Riverside lets me play it for you. Or you could send an email to batandspiderpod@gmail.com. I'm going to download this voicemail. We have one voicemail this week, Chuck, and I'm going to play it.
I forgot to mention this is a stupid thing. But if my brother Zach's listening, he'll know about this. So one of the credited writers on this was adapted. We didn't even say Mad Love is adapted from a French book called The Hands of Warlock. One of the persons adapting this, Guy Endor. And I was like, I know that name. And I, many years ago, I worked at a company with my brother, Zach, with a mm-hmm. Guy Endor Jr., who I think is probably this guy's grandson or great grandson.
Whoa. Whoa.
So little workplace connection to Mad Love for you.
That's crazy. Yeah. Like the Hollywood connection there.
Yeah.
The bloodlines running around Southern Los Angeles exactly. right now.
No.
Chuck, I'm going to try to play this voicemail now.
All right. I'm ready. I'm praying.
Now I opened up Riverside and things look slightly different. So maybe they've been working on it. Who knows? We're going to find out.
Bat Spider. Hey, it's Corey calling from Austin, Texas. I was playing some catch up on the episodes and finished the Pied Piper and just started Stone Cold. And the end of Pied Piper was great. We got all the Benoit Ball talk and all the wondering what other kind of sex things and all that fun stuff was good. Starting Stone Cold, suddenly we're talking about fucking baseball for like 20 fucking minutes. This is Bat and Spider, right? Not Bat and Ball. What the fuck, guys? More Benoit balls, less baseballs. All right, I still love you. I'm going to get back to the Stone Cold episode, and hopefully it'll improve if this baseball chitter-chatter finally wraps up.
Mm-hmm.
Bye!
My God. Corey, jeez.
I appreciate that. I appreciate Chops being busted, Dale. I'm a fan of the Chops being busted. Note taken. Note taken.
Note taken. Less baseball, more Benoit ball. Got it.
I mean, this show talking about Benoit ball is like sending up the Corey signal, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah. 90% chance we are going to get a Corey voicemail after that.
He would 100% leave his dental patient in the chair to walk out and make a phone call with such urgency because of, baseball
that's
talk
probably,
on Bat and Spider.
He probably just, he probably pulled what my dentist pulled today and was like, I have to go make a call to a podcast. I'll just look at his x-rays real quick. Yeah, everything looks fine. I won't go talk to him.
Exactly. Right. Meanwhile, he closes the door to his office.
I got to go talk about Benoit balls. Yeah. God.
Thanks for keeping us honest, Corey. You're right.
Thanks, Corey.
I mean, because nobody else is doing it. We're out there on the front lines, taking the heat for Benoit ball talk. But
we're talking about
the things true to ourselves.
That other podcasts aren't talking about,
Right.
That's why we're still holding these trophies in our hands. Nobody showed up to take them away yet. So I'm assuming now they're in the rightful owner's hands.
Yeah.
So
radio silence since we actually opened this up and celebrated. So we can only hope to assume that this is real.
Yeah. Yeah. So far.
We should make our own trophies like Best Benoit Conversation January 2024. Of like all podcasts. Okay, so now that the voicemail segment, the mail sack segment is over.
Yeah. Yeah, let's, Dale, it's your turn, buddy.
My turn, Dale, to pick.
It's your turn. I hope you came prepared. I hope you're not going to pull what I did last week and made you sit there for 40 minutes.
That was good and long, wasn't it?
I don't know what happened to me. I don't know.
I had so much dead air to edit out of that podcast. God.
I'm sorry. I don't know what happened to me. I was.
Oh, it's okay. What could I do? Should we try to continue with the love month theme?
Yeah, we could. And we don't have to like.
Be down with trying.
Just keep it super loose. Yeah. It doesn't have to be like.
Right.
Yeah. So we don't have to, but if you. Got something on your list that fits.
Be about love or obsession or...
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Sex.
Non-obsession or sex.
Lust.
Non-obsession. You're my obsession. Who do you want me to be to make you sleep with me? I will have you. Yes, I will have you. I will... find a way, and I will have you like a butterfly, a pretty butterfly. I will collect you and comfort you. What do you want me to be to make you sleep with me?
I feel like Colin Clive got the little bit of the short shrift in this movie.
Yeah, he's Colin Clive.
Fucking Colin Clive. It's Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Frances Drake getting that red hot poker in her belly. Well.
Oh my God.
Peter Lorre's up in the balcony handling himself.
What would be like the equivalent now? Like Evil Dead the Musical? Something like this? Like is she just, an Evil Dead the Musical mainstay or something?
This is like Peter Lorre showing up at a horror convention,
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Obsessing over The one.
Over Linnea Quigley.
Remember when you danced on that gravestone? My favorite part.
And I will have you. Pardon the interruption here, real quick, Bat and Spider. This is the part in the show where Chuck's audio was lost and Riverside could not rescue it. There was no backup of it or anything like that. So from here out, it's just me talking to myself on mic. And luckily, there's only a couple minutes left and I picked the movie and that's it. But what we're going to try to do is I'm going to try to recreate Chuck's audio in sync with mine, and we'll do it like the Marvel way. We'll do it in the Marvel style, this conversation. So let's have fun with it. Let's just have fun with it, okay? All right, Chuck, I think I have something here. Oh, that's great. This is Chuck. Thought you might be interested to know. I am. Thought you might be interested in hearing. I am very interested in hearing. Thank you for being such an amazing friend, Dale. Thank you.
You would love to hear.
Yes. I don't know what you just said, but yes.
1968, Chuck.
1968.
François Truffaut.
Oh, fancy. Okay.
The Bride Wore Black.
The Bride Wore Black.
I'm looking here. Looks like it's on YouTube. It's on Hoopla. And it's on Blu-ray, which maybe means watch party for us here in the Bat and Spider Discord before we go live.
That sounds great. These watch parties are a great idea, Dale, that you have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, Chuck probably read the description of the movie here. I don't know what's coming up in the audio, but it's coming now. But Dale is amazing.
Really? That sucks. My library doesn't even have Hoopla.
Yeah, Hoopla.
Suckers. No, they don't have any of it.
Okay, maybe this is where either the description of the movie is read, and Chuck did a great job. I can tell you that right now. I don't remember what he said, but it was an amazing job that he just read. Or maybe he talked about Benoit Balls. Sorry, Corey, if that's the case, because the audio was lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly, Dale. That's what I was saying about Benoit Balls. And it's really a shame.
Bat and Spider's Love Month marches on.
I'm excited about Love Month too, Dale.
Can you feel it?
I can feel it. I can really feel it in my pants.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do that.
Okay, great.
We're going to do that. And yeah, so... Stay tuned for perhaps watch party details could happen if you're listening to this anytime after the release of this episode. Until then, join our Discord. Go to batandspider.com for that information. And everybody out there.
Yeah, everybody.
Who supports us on Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/batandspider. Thank you so much. Means a ton. And that's it for us. We're going to be signing off now. We're signing off.
But go to the Ko-fi page. It means a lot.
Sound good?
Yeah, it sounds great if people go to the Ko-fi page and check out our episode. Love you. God.
After a deep scaling like that, Chuck, you better just enjoy every second of it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot, Dale, oh, yeah, that I had that dental appointment. But the deep scaling really cleaned my teeth. It's been 4 years. But
polished with pumice.
Yes, I have polished pumicey teeth right now.
All right, buddy. Love you.
I love you too, Dale. You're amazing.
Love you. Have a good night. Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you again for listening. This is Chuck Forsman signing off. And don't forget to tip your waitress. I love everybody. And so does Dale. Dale is a good friend. And you are amazing supporters and listeners. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.